Hello everyone, this is Alex Ilonko. I am the Head of Growth and Partnerships at Leighton Canada, and today I'm very happy to introduce you to Dorian, who's our Head of Shred Consulting and Tax Credit, and also with Christian, who's with TurboPlay, Head of Marketing at TurboPlay. So today we are going to discuss about the gaming industry in general, and some of the aspects, some of the interesting aspects. But before we start, I'd love for Dorian and Kristen to give us a quick intro on what they do at Leighton and TurboPlay, and you know, just to kick off the session today. So Dorian, please do us a favor.
Sure. So hi everyone. I'm Dorian. So I'm the head of consulting at Leighton Canada. So I'm in charge of the whole consulting department, innovation funding. So it's not just the R&D tax credit, but we really try to find opportunities for our client in all the tax credit range that the government has to offer. So what really makes a tax credit program a good government funding is that it's basically looking at all the expenses that you've had in the past and try to recoup some of those costs. So, of course, our core business is looking at the R&D one, but there are other, especially in the gaming industry, that applies a lot better than the R&D credit, and that's all the, you know, the digital media and the other provincial credits. So my job at Leighton is really to kind of oversee all of the consulting practices and supervise the work and review, peer review all the work that the consultants do at Leighton.
Excellent. Thank you, Dorian. And Kristen.
Hi, it's great to be here. Excuse me. So I am the head of marketing at TurboPlay. I've worked in the video games industry for a better part of 15 years. I've been a producer, publisher, global publisher, hardware, you know, GPUs, CPUs, and then back to video games, AAA, indie. And somehow I am now with this phenomenal company, TurboPlay, which is more technology-based in the game space. And I'm the head of marketing there with a very small but fantastic team at it, mostly out of Canada. But there's a couple of us here in the States. I live in Texas.
Okay. So hello from Texas we have. So yeah, thanks thanks for this intro, guys. So, you know, to kick off this conversation, I myself, let's say in late 90s and beginning of the 2000s, I used to be gamer myself. I played a bit of, the Forgotten Realms games, the Baldur's Gate, Neverwinter Nights, and Icewind Dale. That might ring a bell for some of you. But also I played Counter-Strike for countless hours, and you know what I'm talking about, Kristen.
Oh yes.
So
yeah, we all.
I probably stopped at Condition Zero, and then I kind of left. I had one of my parents, my father, who was more like making me, Alex, focus on sports, because that's where you're going to get your scholarship to go to college. So that's why I kind of faded away. But it seems like things are different now, but we'll touch on that. But Steam is something like, it became a marketplace, where you can buy your gaming and your games and kind of manage everything from there. But that's where the connection I find. Like, I was wondering, Kristen, how, if you can tell us a bit more about TurboPlay, how the marketplace works on your end, and give us every details of what TurboPlay is and what are the benefits for your users, etc.
Sure, I'd love to. So TurboPlay, essentially, it's an upgraded Steam. I love Steam. I mean, it's my library, is my life. And, they did exactly what needed to happen and phenomenally, but it's a little antiquated. So let's upgrade, right? And let's take that to another level, which is what TurboPlay is. So TurboPlay is a games distribution platform. Essentially, it will curate for you, much like Spotify, or Netflix can curate music and movies for you based on your GameStop play. So it's an upgraded Steam. It's the next generation of games distribution. So this is built on blockchain, with cryptocurrency, machine learning, artificial intelligence, and quite honestly, in my humble opinion, it's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful design. the people involved in the build with the UX, the UI, everything is just next level and it's gorgeous. But what it does outside of, in the game space for the developers, let's talk about what it does for the developers first. When you curate a game based on game style play, it's going to put the lower, the double A's, the indie games, the people that don't have marketing dollars, it's going to push those games in front of those players that need to see the game. Because right now it's just it's a money issue. If you're a AAA and you've got the budget, you're on the front page of Twitch, you're on the front page of Steam, you can afford those things. But if you're the little indie game that could, and you have a phenomenal game, how do you get people to see that without the marketing budgets and the marketing dollars that other people have? So TurboPlay fixes that issue for game developers. And we also have the best rev dev share in the industry. So we do a 90-10 split with the developers. And for the players, you get to see all these games that you otherwise wouldn't know exist instead of having to hunt for them. I'm not sure if you ever tried the search function on Steam. It's a little difficult to navigate. That's something that we wanted to upgrade and work on and do better with. So we are just in our alpha stages. We were getting ready to launch this program and working on the game's reward system for the players. So the players will get rewarded, you know, money. They can't cash out the money and put it in their bank account, but when they play and they do positive actions on TurboPlay, they get money in their account and they can turn around and spend that on more games. So we got ready to head into our alpha to test and stress test everything right in the beginning of COVID. Our team kind of struggled a lot. We didn't have a lot of money left in the bank, right? We're on a schedule and then this pandemic happens, and what do? So we took some time off. And when I say that, I meant the whole team took time off, and I still had to work. So I think I'm still owed a couple weeks vacation at some point in my life. But I went back into my network, and I was asking my friends in the space and in the industry in esports, what are you guys doing? And everyone was panicking, and then the digital networking started to pop up with the Zoom and this, that, and the other thing. I was playing a video game. I went and I did about 30 of those. And I walked away from them thinking, that was not the best experience. And I was playing a video game with my son, and it just dawned on me, who can make a better networking system than video game developers, right? Who can be immersive and gamification? So we spun up GenXP, and now we also, which TurboPlay owns, to kind of get us through this past year, and it's been beautiful. It's basically a big sandbox world where you can just spawn in. You're an avatar. You can change your avatar. You don't have to be camera ready. You just hop in there, right? You hop in there, and we've got exhibitor booths, and you have private meeting rooms and voice proximity chat. You can exchange business card information. We have a whole e-commerce set up in there where you can buy things and go look at things, and we set that right on top of TurboPlay, our infrastructure there, which is fault tolerant, infinite scalability. So that's how we pivoted to get through, you know, this interesting, trying time that we've all had to manage. And now we're, as you very well aware, now we're looking for more money to push TurboPlay out the door.
Yeah. Okay. That's great. And I love, you know, how, you know, the current technologies are being involved to make it democratizing, you know, the revenue share, and like even the smaller players can do it. You know, the word sometimes I remember is like, you know, struggle, and it's like financial or technical. And it's something sometimes we listen to on our end, like on the, especially whether it's on the sales and the consulting side, when we vet for companies, it's just like, if you hit a struggle on a technical side, those are the things that are good. When it comes to, for instance, the SRE, the SRED tax credit. And Dorian, I know you know you know a bit about those things.
Yeah. Well, you know, the RNG credit in Canada is really done in a way that it doesn't fit well with the video game industry, because the way that it's it was created. The purpose of its creation was really to help companies advance underlying technologies. Okay, and so when you think about the video game industry, you think about, you know, companies that make products. You don't think about a company like Turbo Play or Steam first, right? You think about a game to play, and it's really hard for that credit to apply because people are making product based on existing technologies. What really I think helps you in your case or Turbo Play or those kind of companies is that you have to use very cutting edge technologies to be able to build those platforms, and you have to deal with limitation in those technologies. And so the program really works much better for Turbo Play or Steam or those kind of e-com platform that kind of are a channel to sell the products, which make it a lot more advantageous for you. So, and it would be the same in the U.S. as well. Like the tax credit in the U.S. is very similar in terms of technical eligibility. So it would be a good fit for the company for sure.
Yeah. And Kristen, were you aware of the Shred tax credit per se when you were in the industry or before you joined Turbo Play?
I was not. I was aware of, I knew about CMF, the CMF fund in Canada. I've worked with them several times over my career to help other Canadian studios. And that was a phenomenal experience for me. And here in the States, in Texas specifically, they do or did have a tax credit for video game companies, but again, not something like we were doing, a specific, you know, product video games. So it's been interesting to learn that all of these things do exist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Dorian, for instance, how would you say is different? Like, you know, what are the differences like between the multimedia tax credit, the video game tax credit versus the Shred? Like some, I know there's a provincial portion, but
yeah.
What are the main differences, like at a high level maybe, but you found?
So in Canada, we have a few what they call digital media tax credits, which are provincial credits. So, you know, they are done at the provincial level, but they are not funded by the federal government. So each province has its own credit, and they all have different criteria. The biggest one are in Quebec, Ontario, and BC. That's where they have those three credits, which are pretty much similar. The good thing about those credits is it's much more product-oriented. So for a company which is a standard video game company, they would be able to benefit from that credit, even though they only leverage existing technologies to be able to build those products. So that's a good thing for them. What's really tough for small indie video game companies is that as soon as you try to go a bit outside of the box, which is probably what you need to have in 2021 in that industry, it becomes a bit blurred in terms of how the criteria are applied. So when it's a very, you know, straightforward Ubisoft game, it's very easy to claim those credits. When you're trying to build like a VR app or an AR app or something that's not a traditional video game, let's say you're building an ebook for kids, which is interactive, right? Technically, it's not a video game per se, but still there is some interactivity and it's still a digital media at the end of the day. Those credits are much harder to get when you're not fitting in that box. And I think that the issue is that the governments are not, you know, going as fast as what the industry is doing. So it's really hard for them to catch up on if you build something that's really cutting edge, which really kind of defies what we think as a video game traditionally, is that going to still be able to, you know, can they still benefit from those credits? But the advantage of that credit is that it's very product oriented. The difference with the R&D credit is that it doesn't really focus at all on the product itself, but only on the technologies. So when you talk to a video game company that builds just standard video games for, you know, they tend to use Unity or other game engines to be able to build their video games. If we're not able to identify limitation in those game engines, then it will be really hard for them to apply to those R&D credits. So when we talk to those companies in this industry, we have to ask them, which engine are you using? Are you building your own engine or are you trying to advance existing engine? And that's the only portion that they're able to claim for the R&D credit, which tends to be a very, very small subset of the costs that they have in building their video games, which is, it's good. They're complementary in a sense, but they're very restrained in, you know, how the government sees what a video game is.
So if I can ask you a question, Dorian, and just kind of, that was fascinating to me. Gen XP that we spun up because of COVID to get us through that year, we do use the Unreal Engine and we have reconfigured it for what we need it for. And as a result, I believe it's Fortnite can get 500 CCUs, concurrent users in an event, in an existing instance. And we got over 1,000. So that was a pretty exciting thing to do. So that would qualify what you're saying is for another tax credit.
It could. The way that we have to present the RNG project to the government is trying to explain to them why Unreal is not working the way that you want to make it work. And then understanding what is limited in Unreal itself and what does it take for you to be able to achieve what you're trying to set yourself for. Then the government will look at, concretely what was done. Are you just configuring the engine to fit your purpose, which means you're just enabling and disabling existing functions in the source code? Or are you building extra layers, or you're just modifying the way that it's processing the data? And if you're in the second category, then, you know, you're basically adding more stuff on the engine, then you could defend that you have an R&D project. If you're just configuring, then it's much harder to present it as an R&D endeavor.
Thank you. I learned something new today.
And see, and that's why I like to have Dorian because, he's able to explain very straightforward certain things were quite complex. And on a follow-up question, Dorian, I wanted to ask you is what are the cases, did you find any cases where you were able to combine both, both tax credits without being out of bounds?
Okay, we have companies where they are doing both. I would say it tends to be more service based company, because for the multimedia tax credit, you don't necessarily have to build your own video game as a producer. You can just give a service to other companies that are building their video games. And the type of clients that we work with, tends to provide, mocap services or sound recording services for video games. And so all of the money that they spend paying their employees to do that type of work. So for mocap, they would pay actors to actually film them and then send that data to the producers. That's kind of the activities that you can claim into the multimedia credit. But on the R&D, they also work on improving the technologies to do mocap. So they work with cameras, they work with softwares that are limited in terms of how they capture, 3D data in a 3D space. And so that would be the kind of project that we claim it. It tends to be, when a company work on both levels for those credits, it tends to be different teams in the company that work on each project. So you have a team of producers and assistant producers and technicians that do all of what would be eligible for the multimedia credit. And then you have more of an R&D team when you have engineers and, sound engineers that are more into using the tech to be able to provide the service.
Okay. So now we are talking, we're talking in the gravy, and I like to pick your brain on that. So is there any cases where there's an overlap and you have to make the arbitrage between which one I pick? Do I go with the MMTC, the multimedia tax credit, versus the Shred?
It's pretty rare. I would say it can happen. It can happen if it's a very small company, but you have to remember that for the multimedia credits, you're only eligible if you sell a product in the end. So if the service that you provide gets into a commercialized product, or you actually sell the product yourself, so we're talking about a video game or an app or those kind of product. On the R&D side, you don't necessarily have to have a product at the end of the day to be able to claim that credit. But it can happen that you have an employee that would fit into both categories. And in that case, you have to choose which one would be the more profitable for the company, because you're not allowed to claim two credits on the same dollar that is spent by the company. So you have to choose, They both have their advantages and disadvantages, but what we do is that when we get those cases, we do simulations to see, depending on the level of involvement that a specific employee has on the R&D side or on the multimedia side, what makes most sense for the company. And it's not purely a money decision. There's a lot of factors you have to take into account. There's a risk, audit risk with the government, because it's different government that are assessing those credits. And there's cash flow. Because it's two different credits, they don't get assessed at the same time. One of them will come sooner than the other. So you might want to get less money, but faster, or more money, and you're willing to wait more to get that money.
I have another question. This is fascinating. I'm learning so much. Now, essentially with TurboPlay and GenXP, they're two separate IPs, mm-hmm. right? I can treat them that way, and I can get tax credits for both companies, correct?
Yes.
Now, the second GenXP, which is 3D Worlds, we license that software to other people to use. Is that eligible by the way that you just described, you know, if you sell your products?
Oh, you have some tough questions, huh? Sorry.
This is fascinating. I don't know anything about the world that you work in, so I have so many questions. This is really great stuff.
It's tough for me to answer because the credits, the multimedia credit in Ontario is not as familiar to me as the one in Quebec and BC, but I would say we would need to look into it in terms of if they're selling the software to other companies, we need to look at the business model. Is it software as a service that they would pay a recurring fee to your company?
Okay. Yes.
Then in which case, we would need to dig a bit more. But what you're right is that because it's two separate entities, they can both claim the same credit. Because each entity has its own cost, right? We're looking at each have their own employees.
Right.
What can happen, it can become tricky if those two companies that are associated start to transfer money between each other. So if one is subcontracting to the other or vice versa, that's where it becomes a bit complicated because the government treats associated companies in a different way than two separate entities, especially in the way they define the threshold. The purpose of this credit is really to help small and medium companies. And so they look at some accounting data to make sure that you fit within the SME box. But they do treat associated companies as one box. So when you have a very small startup that is part of a huge holding, it can be the money that they can get from the government can be hindered by the fact that they are owned by a huge holding. So we would need to look into how those two companies interact with each other and how the money is distributed between them. But it would be tough for me to answer with a straight answer.
Yeah. It makes sense. Makes perfect sense. It's very convoluted.
Yeah. And Dorian, and like, I wanted to jump on another subject we're discussing before, you know, we started the podcast was how often it's a little different subject, but how often, like, you know, do you see in your experience or in your team's experience, like, you see casual gaming versus like, you know, more like, you know, the regular hardcore gaming coming in, like, you know, in the industry. Have you like, maybe it's your perspective, it's what we sign and what we have as a client, but do you see like a balance, but more and more casual gaming coming your way? Or
I mean, for me, I've never been a huge gamer in the sense that I've always been a casual gamer. My brother is My brother is a big gamer, and I've been to conventions with him because in everything, I've always found it interesting, and I've always liked the industry itself, right? Seeing that world that my brother was into, I can see what a pure gamer is. But I would say now, like today in the industry and the clients that we work with, I don't see that much of that fringe anymore. I see a lot more casual gaming. We could argue on how do we define casual gaming, because my understanding may be different than yours, but
argument at all. If a 77-year-old woman is on a plane playing solitaire, she's a gamer. There's no argument. If you are playing a game, you are a gamer. If it's one game or 12.
So I feel like nowadays the portion of casual gamer just keeps increasing. And I don't think it's necessarily because people are less interested in video games. I just feel it's the way our lives is are now. Like we're so busy all the time with work, and it's the world is so fast paced that I think people don't find the time. We're discussing earlier about, do we listen to podcasts on our daily lives, right? And I was mentioning that I listen to audiobooks, and I've always hated audiobooks throughout my life. I never understood why people would listen to books. And I always felt like, you know, listening to a book is not really like reading it. It would be cheating a bit, right? And then now there's just so much work, and we're so tired with all the work that we have to do. And it's always so fast paced that even just being actively focusing on a book is harder for me. And I just find it that, you know, listening to it is much more passive, like watching a movie or playing a video game. And I feel like people are becoming casual just because they don't find the time. Maybe they used to be more active gamers, and then in their everyday life, they just become more and more casual. And so I think maybe the portion of people that are still very into gaming is just decreasing because of that. Not necessarily because they don't like games anymore, but that's just my understanding of how I see it.
Yeah, and you're totally right, Dorian, because I used to play a lot when I was a teenager, like a lot, like, you know, almost double digits in a day. That's how much I used to play in terms of hours. And, you know, the more you grow up and you have more responsibilities with family and work, and you can't do as much, right? So it makes sense to go into some kind of entertainment, kind of like to log off of work to do that. And I was wondering, to bounce back on another subject, Kristen, how much of, like, you know, would you say there's an offering within Turbo Play for casual gaming versus, you know, the regular or like hardcore gaming crowd?
It would encompass all of them, just like Steam would, as a games distribution service. So you can, it's free to sign up and register. It doesn't cost anything. Even though it curates, it's not a subscription model at all. It's a free service. So if you're a casual gamer and you have one game on Turbo Play, or if you have 30 games on Turbo Play, whether you play shooters or whether you play puzzle horror, it doesn't matter. So it will have everybody. It should be 100. It's just inclusive.
Yeah. And, you know, when you mention like that's great, because when you mention like, it's kind of like the video game Spotify suggesting, you know, games proactively, would you be able to, you know, with the future of casual gaming or gaming itself, like create a playlist of gaming, you know, things I want to play in the morning, things I want to play, you know, on weekends, things I want to play, you know, when I'm off, like, you know, on vacation. Because I do that with Netflix, for instance. You know, mm-hmm. When I wake up, and sometimes I want to put on something like on background, or like during lunchtime, I put like a small episode, you know, or like kind of like Friends, you know, something I know, but it's casual. But if, you know, I have a long weekend coming up, you bet I'm watching Attack on Titans. You know, it's just like the full season, and, you know, I've ordered food from Uber Eats, and I'm ready to watch like that 20, 24 episode long kind of season. So, is it the idea behind it, the philosophy behind it, or is there something more that maybe we should know?
No, I think that's a great way to explain it. Especially like Netflix, right? And it should, it, once you're, if you get more involved with it, when you hop onto Netflix and you're saving your show list, right? And you're clicking, you can do that on Triple Play as well. So you can, you know, click on things that you like, save them for later. And that's how, you know, machine learning, artificial intelligence will start to figure out, you know, other things and suggest them to you. And you can check them out, and you can categorize them, and keep track of everything inside there. So it's very similar.
I see. And can you expand on the monetizing side? Because at some point, that's interesting to me, because, you know, you're talking about, we were doing an episode before about, you know, the blockchain and how it was democratizing certain things on the financial side, especially in third world countries. So I see some kind of similarities, you know, versus like, you know, an indie gamer, indie development shop who could actually have them pretty much the same exposure as an AAA.
Absolutely. And that's why this is so important. That's why TurboPlay is important. You know, outside of, if I remove myself from the job aspect of it, of this, right? And it's not my job and I don't work there. And I look at this as someone that has been in the video game space for 15 years and watched it grow and explode and occasionally implode and go through all these changes as it grows up. I look at this objectively and say, this is important. This is important for game developers. This is something that would have helped me 10 years ago. It would have helped so many games that were really great, really well done, highly polished, beautiful, that no one ever saw. And that's sad. So, you know, TurboPlay gives that opportunity. Even to all those games, if you've got a game that you made 10 years ago, and I'm going to go back and grab some of my dev friends that made games that were incredible 10 years ago, 8 years ago, 5 years ago, and go, let's go. Put it on TurboPlay and let's go. You know, give it another run, because if you're looking for that genre, it's going to curate it for you. And that's so important to have an even playing, it's because it's not fair. Right? So this puts everything on an even playing field. And it's beautiful to me as someone that works in video games. So important.
Yeah. And on that, it's interesting you mentioned that, because part of, you know, the multimedia task credit in some provinces, if I'm not mistaken, that were like some of the marketing expenses were covered by it in Ontario and BC. Dorian, maybe I'm inaccurate.
You're right. The Ontario and the BC one are the ones that allow some type of marketing expenses. The Quebec one does not. So the Quebec one focuses on production only, and, you know, copyright acquisition and all this, where the Ontario and the BC one are a bit further, they go a bit further down the line and then allow more expenses.
And I think that's the problem, right? If we can talk about that, I think that's the problem. Everybody wants to give money to develop, and there's no one giving money for marketing. So what do they do with that game? And that is a big problem, and it's always been a problem. And it's something that I, you know, when I speak on panels or podcasts or wherever I'm at, if that's the topic, you have to start marketing the day you decide you're going to make a video game. That's when you start, and it's expensive and it's time consuming, but it has to be done. But all that money gets put into development and production, and nothing goes towards marketing. And I think that's a big mistake.
Yeah. Well, go on, Duran, please.
I was going to say that, you know, the CMF, the Canadian Media Fund funding that you know, kind of goes there, try to help with the marketing and the commercialization of those products, but it's, you know, even probably better than I do, that it's so complicated because there are so many different streams, and it's so not transparent the way it's presented to the people developing those products, and the amount of delivery that you have to do to the government to be able to receive that funding is very, very tedious, like, you know, 40 to 60 pages of presentation. So this one is pretty tough, and the government has been struggling before in, you know, reaching the companies to let them know about those programs. They have launched recently an innovation website where it's easy to kind of, it's like a giant database where it's easier for someone to look into what's available. But one of the key issue, and I mean, the reason I like tax credits, so the R&D tax credit, the multimedia, is because they're pretty stable in a sense that they've been here for a while. They're not going to go at some point, like they're supposed to stay for the long run. But when you get those grants, that, you know, kind of try to target a specific issue that they identify, whether it's COVID or other type of issues, there are so many of them that just open and close, it's quite impossible for a company to just keep track of what's available and when it closes and when it reopens. And I'm pretty sure Canada is not the only country struggling with that. Like the US is probably the same, especially when you have like 50 different states and different regulations and different credits. And I think what's lacking out there is really a cohesive platform for companies to know what they are eligible for before they meet the deadlines.
Without a doubt, I wholeheartedly agree with that. And I've been in that situation. All those situations you just described, I've been in all of them.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, the The funny thing is, like, it's almost the criteria to be, like, you know, to get money are focused on the tech side, but what is really necessary to be successful as a game is also on how you commercialize it, like, you know, the portion. I'm not into as much in gaming as I used to be, but the smallest game I've seen, or like I knew about, was because I've been bombarded with ads on that game, you know, and at some point I want to try them, you know, it's on Instagram or on other social media platform, and I'm thinking, you know, those ads cost money, and you have to burn a lot of money to get in front of your audience. So, you know, what are the, sometimes I ask myself, what are the other ways, you know, to get into that? So, at Latent, sometimes what we would try to do is when we work with tax credits, there's a way to, for you, for instance, to get your money faster, by integrating, like, you know, some lending companies, I'm not going to name them, but that are going to lend you the money against the potential tax credit you're going to secure based out of the financial and technical expertise we bring on the picture. And that can accelerate even more your cash flow. So you can actually spend the money that you have spent on R&D tax credits. And, you know, the budget you're getting, you can reallocate that for the release, that for, you know, on marketing. So this is the kind of things that I've seen myself on the commercial side. The other thing is more about, you know, the esports side. So that's the revenue generation. So, Kristen, how, you know, I wanted to ask you how, for instance, TurboPlay, is there a way TurboPlay will be enabling that? For you know, for giving exposures for the games, you know, who will be on the platform, hosted on the platform.
Absolutely. It's infinite, right? Technology is amazing, and sometimes you just, you know, we'll sit down as a team and have a weekly team meetings, and then all of a sudden someone's like, "Hey, why don't we do this?" And you know, you say, "You know what? We can. We have the capabilities. You know, how do we get there?" And that's what's really exciting about the infrastructure that we've already built, is it has the technology to do so many incredible things. NFTs, for instance, right? You know, that just popped up out of nowhere and became a thing. So we have the capabilities to do that at TurboPlay and GenXP. For us, you know, I think we're going to probably merge those two brands and have TurboPlay, where you can come on and play your video games and meet friends, and then you can pop over to GenXP, which is more of a lifestyle brand, and you can hop into a big world and, you know, talk to developers, talk to streamers, you know, find new things that you like to do inside this fun, playful world that we've built for y'all just to have a good time.
I see. I'm sorry, I missed the point. Riley, we're going to have to cut this portion. I kind of lost track on what I wanted to ask.
Well, maybe I can add, because you mentioned a point about you know, people using the RNG credit to reinvest the money into marketing, which I think is great, but there is one issue with that, is how long the government takes to give the money back to the companies. Because all of those tax credits, you have to think that, you know, a company needs to finish their financial year before they can apply for the credits and ask the money back on the cost that occurred. So they need to financially have the cash flow to sustain their regular business activities without, you know, living on those credits. But even then, once you submit a claim in Canada, it can take, like, you know, between 4 to 9 months before you start seeing the money back. So it's not, you know, I think in 2021 now, or 2021, like it's, if you want to get the product ready to market, 9 months is a huge delay before you can start investing in marketing if you're really relying on that money. So I think it takes a lot of cash flow to start the process, and then you can start thinking about reusing and reinvesting that money. So for a very, very young startup, it's
not
perfect
viable.
As it seems to start with. Yeah, it's really hard to live on that only.
It's not viable. The marketing dollars have to come with the production dollars. They really do. It's too late, and that's what sinks a lot of great games and a lot of the amazing teams.
Okay, and typically that's kind of like what I've seen is a lot of indie shop are on sweat equity for some time, and you kind of have to go through that like tough year, sometimes 2 years, to get what you want, and then they either find some funding solution, they find early success, or they get seed funding for like either an angel investor or even better like a VC firm. Is it your case? Was it the case for Turbo Play?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
So I was wondering, like, did you go through the same phase? Did Turbo Play did go through the same phase where you have to kind of like bootstrap for some time, then like not even incorporate, and then
I actually can't speak to that. I came on after a portion of it was built. Eric probably could talk better to that than I could. But I do know we struggle. We already struggle, right? And especially with the pandemic and what we needed to do there to stay afloat and make good decisions. We have investors that are obviously important to us, and we want to deliver. And how do we do that? So, but yeah, there are times that things take so long that you sweat. You sweat and you're like, should I update my resume today? Is today the day that I do that? Because it's difficult to find that balance. It really is. We've been extremely fortunate and lucky, even though we do go through moments of panic for sure.
And yeah, now that's the question is coming, like, how, what made the investors want to believe in Turbo Play, for instance? Like,
I can't really speak to them. We have, I think other investments and companies that I've worked for, it's just, you either love video games, you believe in the person that's behind it, their track record. We have quite an incredible team assembled over at Turbo Play, some highly accomplished individuals in the space. I call us the dream team, right? There's no problem we can't resolve together when we all come together and put all of our experience on the table. We just continue to knock it out of the park together, and that's been really exciting for us. And I think because our energy level is so high and we're always excited and we do have that momentum, I do think investors look at that and look at, what you want to do and how excited you are to get it done. And that, that when you bring that to the table and then you have something that you can actually show people, right, which we do, we can show them these platforms and walk them around and explain to them, how they work, how they operate, where we're headed, where we're going, what we're doing with everything. It's exciting because it's technology that's advanced now, right? We're doing blockchain, crypto, so that's very far advanced stuff. So we're there. We're here building it now. Hi, if anyone's listening, come help us. We would love your money.
Yeah.
Can I ask, Kristen, I'm curious to know how COVID impacted you, because the video game industry is one that I thought, like, maybe like the health tech industry that kind of thrived during COVID, but health tech for obvious reason. But I don't know how it was in the US, but I remember when the pandemic started in Canada and they closed everything on March 15th, 2020, all the video game consoles went out of stock and people just bought all the Switch and all the Xbox and all this. So I'm curious to know, on what level did that make it more of a struggle for you guys?
The industry exploded during that time, right? It was fantastic for many, many people. GameStop, right? Look what happened there. It was exciting. But for us, as a new platform that was just going to market, for us, it wiped out everything. For everyone that was there to go to market, we don't have our shows. We don't have E3. We don't have PAX. We've lost all that. And that's your go-to-market plan. And that's where you begin and start. And with that off the table and not an option, if you were going to market, that was a big deal. Like, everyone had to take a step back and look at it and decide what that looked like. And for us, it looked like GenXP, which was essentially a spinoff company to keep us floating. We did some incredible shows. We had a great time doing that. And we're going to incorporate it into TurboPlay now because, you know, it's already built and it's pretty fantastic. But for us, we did something different to generate money to keep us floating. And that's going to be the way that we market our products now and head into the market, because it's a digital 3D world. So that was a big change for the world. Everything went digital.
Yeah, and that's really interesting what you mentioned, Dorian, because there's so many applications I've seen leveraging like the video game technology to be able to sell, because you cannot go somewhere because it's, you know, it's locked down. So I've seen that in prop tech. I've seen that in training. What are some of the industries, for instance, Christian or Dorian, you've experienced that, you've seen that, you know, in your experience, like using like video game kind of tech?
Yeah, like product placement and things, right? You can do that. You know, it's, you know, if AMD wants their new GPU flashing off, you can, you know, build that into a, you know, 3D model and pop it in any video game. So there's a lot of cool things that are coming down, on that aspect, that I do try to stay up to speed on. And it's fascinating to think that you can, you know, just product placement inside a video game. Never thought we'd be there. We're here now. So that's interesting.
Even for me, I think the concept of gamification in companies, I really started seeing more and more companies thinking about gamification in 2018, 2019. You know, people working on call centers or health tech then even trying to get more data in an easier way. And I think, I don't know if because they think that people have a shorter attention span and they need to be more, you know, more entertained while they work. But really over the past 3 years, I'm seeing a lot more gamification.
Yeah, I mean, without saying names of companies, I have had meetings with giant retail companies, professional sports, professional football teams. Everyone wants this hybrid model now. So the professional, you know, football team wanted us to build a 3D world for their NFL draft, right? Because you can't have an in-person event. So where do you go next? You go digital. So it's been, you know, car companies, giant retail companies. It's everyone that needs to do this hybrid model now and convert over. And it's something that you can carry in. Like let's say, you know, tomorrow, something wipes out, you know, COVID and things go back to normal. If you're going to spend $1 million or $2 million or $3 million on an in real life event, why wouldn't you spend a couple hundred thousand, you know, depending on the work and the dev, to have that online digital where you can show it off worldwide? It just makes sense. So if you've got a new pair of Nikes going to market, you know, do a digital event. You can sell them. People can buy them. They can try them on in their digital 3D worlds. Talk to each other, make friends. It's great for branding. You know, host a concert. So these hybrid events they're not going to go away.
Yeah. And one of the recent crazy application I've seen, not so crazy, but you mentioned that you kind of mentioned the similarities between Netflix and TurboPlay. And actually Netflix is starting to integrate gaming technologies within it and offer their own games, right?
I read that too. I read that as well. And I thought, oh, that's going to be a game changer.
Yeah. So like, I don't know if it's like, you know, a loaded question, but how do you feel about that?
I think it's great. I think it's great. You know, of course, with their money, it concerns me, right? I want to get to market before they do. I think my product's better, of course. But you know, it scares me. They've got all kinds of money and they do things well. They really do. They do things fairly well. So, but you know, we're seasoned veterans in the space. So I think it's great. I think, you know, I do believe in sharing knowledge. There's more than one company out there that's doing the 3D digital worlds, and we talk to each other. You know, there's more than enough money to go around, right? There's so much money out there that bring it on, do it, build something bigger and better. You know, I believe in that and the innovation and helping each other. So we get on the phone and we'll help each other. Like, are you having latency issues with this so-and-so? We're using this company. How do you like them? And like, you know, you're like, don't use them. Go to these guys. You want to help out your neighbor because there's plenty of money to be made and go around. It's you know, bring it on, Netflix. Bring it on. We're ready.
There's one portion I think it's interesting on the Netflix side, and it's because, you know, I used to play the Baldur's Gate younger, and like it's like build your own story, you know, the outcome, because, you know, you start with the same storyline. You can pick maybe one, create your character, pick your like one character in the movie, and you movie in their perspective, and based on some of the decisions, the storyline changes. And I think it's
we have that technology at Trouble Play to do that.
As well. Wow, that's amazing.
I can't wait to sink my teeth into that one.
So yeah, that's something I was really looking forward to see. And you know, I'm glad we have you as a client, guys. You know, it's just like, you know, more.
We're lucky to have you.
I had another question for you, Kristen. I don't know, how do you feel about social media in general, and how, you know, I'm starting to see the premise of kind of social media switching toward more like a, you know, all immersive game. But I think Facebook is a bit behind on this, but I've seen like, I've been working with companies that talk to me about, they call it a social media platform for hosting, you know, entertainment events, but what I see is a full immersive game. And so I'm wondering, do you think that, you know, in maybe 5-10 years, like, social media is going to be completely shifting toward more of a game platform than what it is now?
I do believe Mark Zuckerberg just dropped a bomb about the metaverse in an article I was reading this morning. Yeah, that's where we're headed, no doubt. Everyone's doing it. That's where we're all going. So, and we're halfway there, and we're ahead of the curve. So we'd like to stay there and continue to develop, you know, what we have. But yeah, it's absolutely going to be the way. When you can interact with other people, as an avatar inside a world and purchase things and look at things, and yep, that's where we're going.
And even on the education side, I've seen so many, you know, like, you know, how technology is incorporated and gamification is incorporated, like, you know, creating virtual like conference rooms, like you are navigating in a campus.
Yep.
And I really liked it because, you know, I always remember it's so much easier to learn something when you're kind of playing it rather than just like, point blank, like, you know, boring text or.
Wouldn't classrooms. Yeah. Right. I mean, when in classrooms, everyone having to stay home and, you know, all the kids staying home using Zoom, wouldn't it have been great to pop them into a digital world as an avatar? Right. You know, it's definitely the future.
Yeah. And, it's something like, you know, it's easier actually to grasp the knowledge if it's like, you know, you're playing it, and that's what gaming enables. And, you know, that was kind of like, it's funny how things turn around, where that was like 20 years ago, gaming was just like, you know, you know what, you're just wasting your time and you're not going to do anything about it. And now, when you look at how it enables like knowledge acquisition, you see some, like, I read some articles about how, like, you know, fighter jet pilots or even like surgeons are doing gamification, using gamification to learn those things, like, you know, that are quite, you know, extreme or intense, and how they learn. That's it. And you also look at, like, you know, esports, the same thing. What do you, like, 20 years ago is like, what are you doing with your life, right? And now it's, you know, my son or my daughter can be, you know, can be like a live streaming and be earning, you know, as much as a soccer player, sometimes more. So
sometimes more. Sometimes a lot more.
So the coverage, and we're talking about 16, 15-year-olds like doing this because they do that all day, right? So that's how the industry changed, and that's how fascinating it is. Is there any other questions on your end before, or any comments you would like to add on this before we close the session?
Maybe as a closing statement, Kristen, I'd like to hear where you see TurboPlay in the next 5, 10 years. Like, how far do you think that can go? Because I'm pretty curious to hear about that.
Technology is fascinating, especially with the digital worlds now, which I believe everything's going towards. And we're already halfway there, so it's extremely exciting. I think that this is going to be huge if we can get this off the ground and get the funding that we need to continue to develop and grow these new technologies. Along the way, I know the team has developed some stuff that they've released open source online because they just happen to find something that's fantastic and it can help banking or something else. And, you know, that's giving back as we develop. But I think 5 or 10 years, I think everyone will have a TurboPlay account. I really do. I wholeheartedly believe that because it's where you can connect with your friends. Do you remember we were talking about, oh, how far we've grown? LAN parties, right? I mean, that's how I gamed. You had to, you know, go to people's houses so that you could play together. And now we can play together, and it doesn't have to be video games. We can play together in a digital world, watching a concert, you know, doing something that you love. Maybe you can be a quilter. I like to quilt, right? And you have, like, you know, all these quilting people get together in a digital world and show off their work and what they've done, and that's where it's all going and headed. So I think we're sitting very, you know, right on the cusp of a massive change in this space, like you said, you know, as far as social media goes. I don't remember the last time I touched Facebook, to be quite honest with you. And I used to use it every day. So, you know, now being in a digital world, yeah, being in a digital world and being able to, you know, hop in, and even our weekly team meetings, hop in the digital world, you know, and it's just, it's a whole different experience. It's less tiring, right, than being on the phone, being on the Zoom. It's just, you can walk around with your headset if you want to. You can pop it up in a browser. It's available on your phone. It's everywhere, and it's super easy to use. So I think we're all headed there.
Oh, wow. Wonderful. All right, then. Seems like we have the final word from Kristen. Thanks for your insight, and I hope, you know, I really hope that that's what we are getting, and I wish all the best for TurboPlay. Thank you, Dorian, for being here today and sharing your expertise and your knowledge about the tax in Canada. Was Alex at Leighton. Thanks you for your time, guys, and thanks for...
Yeah, I'd like to thank Dorian, too. I learned so much.
Oh, thank you. That's nice.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. That's it for today.
Agents of Change, a Leighton podcast, does not constitute a recommendation for any organization, product, or service. It's produced and recorded by Blumex.